This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, you've entered the war zone, the Monday Night War Zone. JT here with the Monday Night War, I'm sorry, the Wrestling War Zone, Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective. And joining me as always on this show is my partner, Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you?
Doing good. Just got dropped off by Spanky, and I am ready to do this podcast.
Okay, sounds good.
Where I live, there's a, he's like an Uber service, but his name's Spanky, and he'll like go around and pass out business cards and stuff like that. So tonight I participated in some rare weeknight drinking.
Yeah, it's hardcore.
Yeah, because the guys I was with, they work like a weird schedule, so Wednesdays and Thursdays is like their weekend. So I went out with them, came home. I'm about like a 0.7 on the Johnny Sorrow inebriated meter for this podcast. So.
Can't wait to hear the garage door open.
Yeah, if you hear any cans getting crushed, doors opening or me clearing my throat or burping. So that's coming up.
All right.
But we called Spanky Services and he dropped us off. We all live two neighborhoods right next to each other. So. Spanky did a good job, dropped us off safely, and now I'm ready to talk about this great show with you.
Ooh, good on Spanky. That's quite the entrepreneur. I like it.
Nice.
Yeah, I think the best Uber ride I've had was in a place called New Orleans with Donnie Uber, but I'll leave that story so I don't get yelled at yet again. But it was a hell of an Uber ride. So how you been? It's been a while.
I have. It has been a while, what, a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, I think
so.
Doesn't
feel like it, but it has been. Same old, besides Spanky dropping me off. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, about the same. Since we last talked, I put together a giant swing set, so got some man points for that.
That was intense. It seems like you're doing projects every weekend.
It is. It's been a lot of projects.
Moving the cowboy, building the swing set. What were you doing last weekend with Don?
Oh yeah, shoveling fucking rock. You know, he didn't wait too long to cash it in his favor. Like, he was like a guy who wins the money in the bank and cashes it in later that night. You know, he helped me put the swing set together, which he was there from start to finish. So I appreciate it. And I'm like, you know, all right, I owe you one. Let me know. Within days, he's like, oh, can you come help me move these rocks from my driveway to the building? Like, all right. So there I was Saturday morning after my second basketball game in three nights. First thing Saturday morning, I was out there loading fucking rocks up.
The cane of West Warwick, Rhode Island, Don. Cashing in quick.
That's it. Quick cashing. You know, it's funny because I got to write these things down. I had a funny story, and I was saving it specifically for this podcast, and now I'm trying to remember what the hell it was.
Well, it probably started with when we were in New Orleans.
No, it was something recent that happened to me because I usually like to save them for this show. And you know, like the rage ones I save for Aaron on No Holds Barred.
Right.
You know, Scott, I guess we talk about whatever. And then here I try and save like kind of like the embarrassing weird stories. And I had one and now I cannot remember what the hell it was. I'll think of it. It'll come back.
I want to see Aaron in Atlanta traffic.
Yeah. You don't think he'll survive?
I don't think he'd make it.
Be a short run.
If mustard on the dashboard garners that much of a reaction, then I mean, I've seen people painting their toenails. You know, it runs the gambit. I mean, of course, the makeup. But, yeah, I mean, literally painting your toenails going down the freeway and everything else. So it's been good times driving in old ATL.
There you go. I made Trencher move there.
Oh, my God. All right, are we ready to start this? I am not looking forward to this. So did you watch this show live? I was wondering. We're doing In Your House 4.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I definitely watched it live. Yeah. Yeah. It is In Your House 4 tonight, which we'll talk about in a moment, I guess. But yeah, no, I did. I watched it live. I was definitely locked in at this point watching just about everything. There's a couple this year I missed and watched later, but this is definitely one I ordered.
I may be pulling a Henchy. I think I've watched the show before, but I'm not positive. I'm not 100% that I've watched this before, like from start to finish. I don't, you know, right offhand recall if my video store had it. Certainly didn't watch it live. So I was kind of intrigued. I didn't remember much of it besides the Sean forfeit, and it's less than sterling reputation. So we'll see if that holds up or if that's, you know, well deserved based on the show we saw.
We will indeed find that out.
All right. So let's dive in, I guess.
Yeah, Your House 4, October 22nd, 1995, Winnipeg Arena, Winnipeg, Manitoba. We have, we've lived the build, which we've talked about, like you're saying, has been quite good.
Yep, not bad.
See how it all comes together. I'll start off here, and then you can get into the actual flow of the show. But Tony Wilson sings the national anthem. What'd you think of that?
Tony? Is it Tony or Joni?
I thought it was Tony. Maybe it was Joni. Was it Joni?
I think it was Joni, J-O-N-I.
Oh, I thought it was T-O-N-I.
Yeah, well, I did try to do some Googling on Joni, and not a lot out there on her. She did not have a sterling career. I thought she was about one level up from Rockin' Robin.
And she's an actual artist, so that's...
Yeah, it's Joni, J-O-N-I, okay. So she spells it that way. I mean... Yeah, they called her an up-and-comer. She looked pretty old to me. So, she sings the national anthem. I didn't think much of it except for some of the great crowd reaction shots, which I got to say, this crowd in general is it's a sight to behold because, I mean, we'll get to Dracula, but he may end up being my MVP of the show. And there was some quite sketchy individuals in the crowd during the national anthem. Trench coats.
So you're saying 1995 Winnipeg is an odd place?
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to hang around. Probably felt like a crowd for Aaron George, and we'll leave it at that.
So we got
Stephen Graham fit right in.
Gross. So we get a clip of Gorilla saying Shawn Michaels has a concussion, cannot compete tonight, and Shawn will publicly forfeit the IC title, and Gorilla will hand it to Dean Douglas here tonight, but Douglas will have to defend that title against Razor Ramon, and Gorilla says he's sad to do this. So we talked about it on the last episode, the Go Home Raw. Shawn had said he would be in Winnipeg, and indeed he is, but apparently too beat up to wrestle and defend his title.
Right. Too many Marines attacked him. We'll talk about it, but this was one of the most, like, shoddy production standpoint, WWF productions, I guess, that I've seen. There was some weird background noise going on during the segment. I don't know where Gorilla taped this from. Like, it was like, was it during warm-ups? Was it? It was almost like it was in a high school gym or something.
Yeah,
people
weird.
Were playing basketball. So it's like, what is he? The athletic director at a school, and he's also the president of the WWF. It was very weird, but there's a couple of snafus coming up that we can get to. So this was nothing new. We knew that more than likely Sean wasn't going to compete based on what we heard on Monday. So Gorilla confirms that. Then we get some cheesy opening showing the city of Winnipeg, kind of clips of people.
There's a mountain,
to the
and there's
arena.
The gas station. All right, yeah, here we are.
People seemed very pumped for this In Your House. They really went to some odd areas for the In Your House. I mean, we had Saginaw, we have this, next is Hershey. Winnipeg's a decent-sized town, but still pretty obscure as far as the rotation for a pay-per-view, even if it wasn't In Your House at this time. What was In Your House 1 at? I mean, 2 was in Nashville. That's
it was in Syracuse in some barn.
That's right, yeah. Syracuse. That's kind of a little odd as well. So a little bit different. And then we just went to our announce booth, right, for the night, which was Jerry, Vince, and JR. We get the three-person booth.
Yep.
And Lawler supports the decision of Gorilla Monsoon.
Yes. So
that was kind of our pre-match festivities, and that leads us right into our first match, which is Making a Difference Fatu versus
I just remember
Hunter
my embarrassing
Simpson.
Story. Do you want to hear
okay,
it?
Okay, here we go. Well,
so, after the 4th of July, I had a couple days off, and we went to... Do you have any trampoline parks at your place?
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so this is called Launch. Ty Law actually owns it, the former football star.
Okay.
So we had all had eye doctor appointments, and that whole process took a while. And then we go over to Launch, and so at the eye doctor, they had dilated our eyes, my wife and I, because we had neither of us had an eye appointment in a few years. After my LASIK, I've only gone like twice since then. So we go and I get my eyes dilated, and it's kind of like a weird day. It's like kind of rainy, but kind of sunny on and off. And now like we finish and we had, you know, plan to go to Launch, and like the kids are kind of hungry, but we're like, all right, we're going to go, you know, and it's probably gonna be busy because everyone's off. And, but the problem is neither of us can really see that well because the eyes are dilated. So I put some sunglasses on and I drive us to Launch. I'm like, okay, what's worse of a place to go than in here where it's like just bright lights and chaos everywhere. So we go inside and like, I can't see anything. And we're trying to read, like, there's a huge line. I'm trying to figure out what time the next open jump is. I'm squinting, trying to look at my phone. She can't see shit. So my wife goes and waits in line. In the meantime, I start to get a feeling of, like, immediate bathroom need. So I'm like, all right, take the kids in line. I'm just going to go to the bathroom here. So I go in. And, I mean, you would think some fucking animal, like, just cannot control himself in this bathroom. Like, it was unusable when I walked in the stall. I'm like, this is not a good situation. I'm like, I cannot go jumping on trampolines in the state I'm in now. I can't see, first of all. And second, and I'm, like, kind of dreading because I'm like, how am I going to go to the back? I can't look at my phone. Like, I'm all fucking thrown off. And I'm like, well, I can't hold. I'm not going to survive. But I can't see. So she gets in line, and we have, like, 45 minutes to kill or so before it's our turn to jump. So I set them up in the little cafeteria. They order pizza for them to eat. I drive without – I can't – now, keep in mind, I really cannot see. I somehow drive myself to Panera Bread down the street, go in there, use the facilities there. That Panera is probably not going to be the same. Leave, somehow drive back and make it back. And the first half of bouncing was just like a clusterfuck because I could not – like it took me a good half hour after that for my eyes to finally come back. But anyway, that was the story I had kept in mind because I wanted to tell. And I thought,
there you go. I've never been to the eye doctor, period.
Never?
Never. So, I don't know. I mean, I used to know, like, when I'd do the test, when I'd have my yearly checkup, I was 20/20.
Right.
I'm not 20/20 now. I know that, but I'm still pretty good. So, I just haven't went. But I do have a trampoline story as well.
Okay, let me hear.
So we have one of those too. It's called Catch Air. And, you know, I mean, it's fun to do that. So, I'm a bigger guy. So, I didn't, you know, I thought this was kind of like a playground for all shapes and sizes. So, do y'all have like a ball pit type obstacle?
Yeah.
That one with like the, it's like cubes. Though, you know, it's like the styrofoam cubes is what this one's filled with.
Yeah, I've seen those. This one actually has like you jump up 5 onto like a big like crash pad.
Oh, okay. This is just straight like 100 cubes, like little balls, and you have a trampoline that you go flying in. So this was the very first thing we did. I get up there, you know, Caden jumps in, gets out, no problem. My sister-in-law jumps in, you know, respectable jump, gets out, no problem.
Yep.
You know, I'm trying to show off. I go full on like Jeff Hardy, swan bomb, face first right into this pit, probably, you know, 15, 20 feet from the platform. Apparently all these cubes go exploding up in the air. I am literally at the bottom of this thing, and it takes a lot of upper arm strength to get out of there.
Yeah.
Because what you got to do is, I mean, you have nowhere to put your feet. So you basically almost have to do kind of like a pull-up kind of thing to waddle out. And that was a disaster. I lost my socks. it took about 10 minutes for me to get out there. The poor, like, attendant was like a, you know, a teenage
kid. Oh, yeah,
kid.
They're all kids.
Yeah, he has, like, a night shift at the movie theater. So he comes wandering over there. He's like, do you want, you know, probably like 120 pounds soaking wet. He's like, do you want, you know, giving me his hand? I'm like, dude, you're not pulling me out of here. If anything, I'm pulling you. And so, you know, it was exhausted. And, you know, I never get really claustrophobic. But I did kind of get claustrophobic and panic at one time because it felt like I was on quicksand. Like
I couldn't get out of it, and I was exhausted.
So I like panicked, which was quite embarrassing. Jennifer and my brother thought this was like a gimmick. Like they thought I was just screwing around and still. So I finally get out of there. Before we went to the trampoline park, we ate Golden Corral. So I just, like, had to muster up all my strength to get out of there, and I was done. So I had to find the nearest bathroom, but it was to toss my cookies. Yeah. So I tossed my cookies at Catch Air. I went to the car. This was last summer. So I went to the car, put on the air conditioner full blast, and just, like, chilled out, downed, like, a gallon of water, and then finally went back in for the second half. But, it was really embarrassing.
I'm surprised you went back in. I just would have left it.
Well, I didn't go back into the ball pit. I avoided that.
I mean, even in the building after that.
Oh,
nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, the trampolines are fun. It was just that pit. So fast
forward. I just mean showing your face in there.
Oh, well, come on. I mean, it is what it is. I'm probably not the first fat ass that got stuck in the ball pit. They actually had, like, a stick that they gave, like, the workaround gave that you could pull onto, and they would almost, like, tug-of-war you back to the... It was like what they prod a shark with, like, out in the ocean or whatever. But so fast forward to, like, 6 months later, Caden goes to a birthday party there, and I'm not jumping this time. I'm just there. Well, it's like, we're about to go. We're about to eat cake or whatever. He's in the ball pit. He says, Dad, I'm like, what? He loses his pants in the ball pit. Like, his pants are completely off. So he's just in his underwear, and he can't find his pants. So guess who had to go diving right back into that thing? So I prepared myself this time. I didn't go full Jeff Hart. You know, I eased myself in, tried to hover on top so I didn't have to pull myself up too far, found the pants, and then... singing happy birthday. But yeah, that ball pit is my nemesis,
I guess. So yeah, well, it sounds like you at least got a little bit of revenge, defeated.
Yeah, a little bit of revenge. Yeah. I did find the pants, so haha, you bastard.
You know, it's a weird design in this place too, because they have these benches like that are nice, but I don't like, nobody thought this through. The feet of the benches stick out past the width of the bench. Like, I don't know if you could picture that. So it's like, you know, the bench, and then the leg comes down, and then like the base. But it sticks out just past the width of the bench. You don't notice it, because normally you walk by a bench, you think, as long as you're like not bumping into the bench, you're okay. But in a place where you're literally walking around the whole entire building in your socks with no shoes on.
Yeah.
Like, why would you have a fucking bench with these, like, mines, landmines all over the place? You know, anytime I smack my foot into the foot of the bench, because it's jutting out just enough that you don't really notice it. But you wouldn't think it's there. It fucking drives me nuts.
I hate the scam, too, that you have to buy their socks.
Oh, I know.
But this one, you have to buy their socks.
Yeah, same thing.
It's like the bowling alley. It's like, what is this fucking special socks? Like, they have the little grippers on the bottom. It's like, I can provide.
Did you keep them at least?
Oh, I kept them. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Definitely. You want to buy new ones every time.
These things were like $5 a pop.
Yeah.
Like, the socks. So I was like, yeah. As soon as we left that place, I was like, give them to me. These are going to, like, our safety security box or whatever.
It's like buying clothes at the airport. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. This was ridiculous. But, yeah, those places are pretty fun.
No, they are.
I mean, because I wasn't allowed to jump on trampolines that often as a kid.
Mm.
My mom was very adverse to trampoline jumping. Had to do it on the down low. So I enjoy feeling like a kid, even though I'm certainly not.
We had one of those 80s, like, mini trampolines, like the little tiny, like, workout ones.
Oh, yeah.
And we would lower the basketball hoop all the way down and then put that there. And then basically play, like, basketball, where you, like, jump off the trampoline and dunk and, like, no rules.
Love it. Yeah. Well, WrestleMania 2000... we did the whole day thing, and my buddy had a trampoline, so that was probably like the most hardcore, like, backyard trampoline wrestling I did. I did like my quasi Mick Foley dump all, bump off his garage onto the trampoline, and then like flew up in the air. So that was pretty fun. So good times, good memories. All right, are we ready to discuss Fatu versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley?
I guess.
Okay.
Shit stories can only carry us so far.
Yes. Well, podcast is over.
More to come.
Fatu jumps Hunter at the bell, hammers away. Now we get this sign that comes in clear view of the hard cam that says, "You fucker, hi Todd." So,
hi Todd.
I don't know. Hi Todd. So Mr. Weber pissed somebody off in Winnipeg. Fatu gets noosed on the ropes and Hunter takes over, and now he's finally able to disrobe. I didn't think Hunter did anything on top. He puts Fatu in a headlock. Vince on commentary is talking about Shawn Michaels. He calls him a stand-up son of a gun, which, you know, that's humorous thinking about Shawn Michaels. Fatu takes that inside-out bump off a clothesline that he always does. Vince was pretty annoying on commentary. He did his, you know, he got him. No, he didn't. Like, two right. near falls in a row here, which was... You know, I mean, this was the opener and not that exciting, so let's calm down a little bit. Hunter tries the pedigree but gets backdropped. His DDT has no soul because Fatu's head is too hard because he's Samoan. Fatu hits the, he hits the diving headbutt, but he goes for it, but he misses. Misses a splash, and then Hunter gets the pedigree for the win. I mean, I did think the crowd was, like, there for the high spots of mm-hmm. the match, but Hunter, again, just is certainly not put it all together. His middle portion was very pedestrian. Fatu didn't do a whole lot either on offense besides trying to rally up the crowd a little bit and taking a couple of nice bumps. So, I mean, this was an inoffensive opener that probably looked worse as the show progressed. You know, I mean, like, if right. this was your low point on the show, then it's like, okay. I mean, it wasn't bad. But this did feel kind of like a Raw match, and I ended up going a star in 3/4.
A lot of talk about Fatu's background, too, on commentary and how it's his first singles pay-per-view match. And Vince, at one point, Vince, he's definitely making a difference. Okay, how, Vince?
We don't know how, but he is.
I also, we get, late 95, I think we mentioned this maybe in your career, late 95 really starts kind of the antagonistic Jim Ross that we get over the next probably year and a half or so until, I think from here to like maybe early 97, it's a lot of just angry, like cynical JR. And even here, he's like bitching about how cold out it is, and it's like, oh, it feels nice. It's like, I don't know. It's just like he's out there just like very angry all the time during the stretch. And I don't know if it's his whole like, I'm a real sports announcer guy, and I'm gonna call it that way. But anyway, I think we've talked about this, but it sticks out to me a lot on these.
He was very snarky in this pay per view for sure.
It's this whole stretch. I thought Fatu's early offense was fine. And then Hunter focusing on the head and neck worked after the, you know, him getting caught in the ropes. And I thought it was a pretty good pop for the pedigree reversal, which kind of shows the move is starting to get over, that the crowd is reacting to him blocking it. And Fatu also breaks out a running, I guess, diamond cutter, right? So that was kind of neat. And then, Hunter herself gets the win. He's still not showing a lot, like you said, but the pieces are there. Like, you can kind of see them all over the place. He's just not quite putting them together. And to me, the finisher's getting over. Fatu's being pushed strongly, a loss here. It didn't really hurt, but, you know, obviously Hunter needed the win more for what they had going on. So, yeah, I went 2 stars. I thought it was just kind of a match that existed, nothing too bad, and just kind of there. And for a match with no build, like we mentioned last week, they just kind of threw it out there out of nowhere. So, yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, it was just thrown together. So Jerry's trying to interview Hunter after the match. I wrote this down that he had a raid line. I don't even remember what that. I think he said, like, Fatu, like, that was his cologne or something. I know he said it twice, and it, like, right. fell on deaf ears both times, so I can't remember. I just knew it was lame. Henry O'Garblin comes up from behind with a slop bucket. Hunter puts the king in front of him as a shield, And then Henry chases Hunter out of the building. So there we have his next feud. Firmly looks like it's going to be with good old Hog.
Fucking, I guess it's a natural feud, but...
Yeah, get ready for that. You knew they were going to do that. You had to know. Especially with Hunter, with that the new cologne that he keeps spraying. Like, oh yeah, tailor-made.
What'd you think of King's mullet?
King's mullet was interesting. It was a little out of control tonight, wasn't it?
Oh, it was nuts.
Well, you know, I mean, it'd been a... I mean, again, you got to think, like, all we saw was those tapings for Grand Rapids.
Yeah, so we haven't seen it in a month.
The night after the pay-per-view, so he had a month to grow that thing. And it was certainly 1995. Well, 1995 style mullet.
Yeah, but what makes it worse is the front. Like, he doesn't kind of have a cool front with the mullet. You know what I mean? He's got, like, the bowl cut in the front and then the mullet, which just is, like, way worse.
Oh, and it feels like it's kind of cut, like, or combed. You know, like, it doesn't, like, flow out. It's, like, very, I don't know, rigid in the way. It's just a weird look. Yeah. It's a weird look. Then we get a Cornette and Davey Boy Smith interview. This is kind of the same thing they've been doing now three times in a row. I did enjoy the British Bulldog yelling, "The British Bulldog is here live in your house." So... some great words of wisdom from Davey there.
Marking his spot like a good dog does, yeah.
But besides that, nothing much, right?
No, definitely not. Yeah, they just pretty much cover the history with Diesel, recent history.
And that leads us into our big tag title match, which is 1-2-3 Kid and Razor Ramon versus the Smoking Guns. 1-2-3 Kid and Razor have some swank purple matching outfits. Mm-hmm. They basically, talk about, like, they're together, you know, they do a little backstage promo. This reminded me of Brett and Owen's Raw promo from, like, Christmas Day or whatever.
Right, problems behind them, we're going to fight, we're going to work together,
This is where I had my first line about JR on commentary. He throwed some shade on Arkansas and Texas, you know, being an Oklahoma man. And then King had a line that says, "He goes to a barber where the manicurist doesn't cut your nails, she bites them." Which, talking about the Smoking Guns, which I don't know, does your barber have a manicurist there?
Barber, no.
Yeah, I mean, even my wife, where she gets her hair cut, the manicure or pedicure place is separate, the nail place. Yeah. Right, so.
Idiot.
There we go. He had a little off night, too, I thought, for his jokes. A lot were kind of shoehorned in and lame.
He was kind of funny here, though. He mocks Billy. I mean, it's Cat, whatever, the Pot calling the Cat. Pot calling the Kettle Black. Where he's making fun of Billy's haircut, which, again, is a very 1995 haircut.
Right.
It's extremely 1995.
I think that's where he talks about that barber line. Yeah. Is when he's talking about Billy's haircut. Okay, yeah. So we get a respectful and good start until Kid pulls the top rope down when Bart was running the ropes. He goes spilling to the outside. The Canadian crowd cheers that. We get some double team moves from Razor and Kid as Razor does his fall away slam holding Kid and he falls onto Bart. And then, you know, they end up working over Bart for a while. I thought Ross had a good point here where he talks about how Razor and Kid have made multiple tags throughout the match. I think he said like six when he mentioned it. And he was like, "And the Smoking Guns have only made one." So that was good psychology added in by Ross there. Kid gets another cheap shot on the corner on a break. So Kid's really being aggressive and doing certain things here that are underhanded, which plays into the story we've been getting. Bart gets into the action. He pulls Razor's hair to get an opening. We see a picture of Dean in his classroom watching on about the world's smallest TV. This thing was so tiny.
It was like the one my grandparents had in their little patio outside.
This was 1985. I don't know what type of notes he could garner off this thing. Just looked like specs out there. It looked like he was playing like a Pong game.
I think that was the first TV I had. It was one of those little like monitor things.
Mine was kind of like that. It was a 13-inch. That's where I watched all my Raw Nitros during this era. So
that's where I watched a lot of QVC was on that thing.
There you go. So Kid comes in. He gets beat up a bit, but he's able to post Billy in a pretty nasty-looking spot. Both of them are looking for a tag. And then we get this thing where, at the finish, where Bart pulls Billy on top of Kid with the referee distracted, and then Razor does the same, and that gets a near fall. Razor hits the Razor's Edge, but Kid is wanting the tag. And they wasted like a minute here where Razor went back and forth. He finally tags in the Kid. He goes to pin Billy, and Billy reverses it and rolls 1-2-3 Kid up and wins. So I thought that was a really fun, clever finish.
Yeah.
Kid goes nuts after the match, slapping Razor and attacking the guns. He grabs the belt, and Razor comes back to kind of calm things down. And then Razor gives a little bit of a clap for the smoking guns, and they're getting booed by the Canadian crowd. So I thought this was, I'll just go ahead and spoil it, I thought this was easily my match of the night here. I enjoyed the tag team action we had. I thought the guns looked good as the established team. Razor and Kid were on the same page until they weren't, which sets up their impending feud. And I really liked that finish. It was a finish I couldn't recall seeing before, but it worked out nicely. So I ended up going 3.25 for this one.
Yeah, I went 3. I liked, you know, the build has been really good for Razor and Kid. We've talked about that. It's been some of our favorite stuff since we've been watching. Been a little tame the last couple weeks, but, you know, here it really picks back up. And I like the commentary, too. They're really pushing the importance of the title shot, you know, for Kid and Razor. Like, you know, it's not an easy thing to get, and it's important, and it's a big night for them, and they really play it off well, and we'll see more of it later, that once Ramon knows what his IC title shot, like, Kid almost feels slighted. Like, is Razor really kind of giving his all because he's got, you know, other things to worry about tonight now? And it means, so it almost feels like it means more to Kid than it does to Razor in many ways. So I thought that was like a nice twist that they did too. I liked Billy's offense early, chucking the Kid around. Like, you know, we don't get to see a ton of Billy working as the big man. So that was pretty good. Razor's power offense was good as well. And I thought the finish was brilliant when you think of how the feud has been going. The fact that Kid has been clearly desperate for Ramon's respect and attention, and Ramon has the win, and he gives in for this one moment, gives in to the Kid, and then the Kid fucks up and gets pinned. So, like, it really just is just really well done when you think of how this feud has developed since SummerSlam. So this has definitely been one of the best storylines we've seen on Raw, and it pays off here. And, yeah, I like the tag match. I have good focus narrative and crisp work on both sides. And it's been some of the guns' best stuff that we've seen anyway. And one of their better matches, I think, at 95. So it was a good spot for them. It was a good, you know, get them away from some of the other crap they've been dealing with. give them a pretty good team to work with. And overall, ends up being a strong package.
Yeah. I enjoyed this. I think this is kind of like the only thing that kind of redeems this show ever so slightly is this, like, whole storyline and everything that developed from that. So not too shabby here. After that, we get Doc with some merchandise. He has stand-ups of Brett and Sean. He says, ladies, can you imagine Shawn Michaels in your house 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? So there we have it. And Doc's even going to throw in, of course, the classic video. So you got all the goodies from Doc with the merch here.
I love the merch segments, whether it's Doc, whether it's Barry Dudinsky. It's always the best parts of the show.
Yeah, I think we can safely say he's gone now, right?
No, I don't think. We'll see. I think we might see him again, honestly.
Come on.
I love it. Brett can watch over you while you sleep.
Yeah, that was weird because, yeah, he really puts in the Playboy persona for Sean by saying, like, ladies, can you imagine Shawn Michaels in your house 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? And then he immediately transitions and is like, kids, Bret Hart will look after you and watch you. It's like, wait a minute. It's like, so this one guy's like just this Playboy home wrecker.
I know. Bret Hart will sleep with your mom while you sleep.
It's like, come on. Bret's like this upfront, respectable dude. And then that leads us into our third match, which is Marty Jannetty versus, finally, the in-ring debut of Goldust.
Mm-hmm.
So we get kind of all the vignettes that have come in. Goldust gives a promo. They're really trying to play up kind of his bizarre nature. They play that up. Raw says, I've been all over Oklahoma 2-3 times and never saw anybody like that. So here we go. I was interested to see how this debut happened because, I mean, Goldust is one of my favorite characters, probably in company history. Finished high on my GWWE poll, and overall he finished respectable. So here he is. Here's his in-ring debut, and Jannetty's no slouch either.
Mm-hmm.
Jannetty gets some flash offense to start. Goldust takes a big bump on the entranceway. Jannetty calls Goldust a chicken, starts dancing around like a chicken, which that's like the ultimate like Marty Jannetty GIF, if somebody called that, because he is so like goofy like that, like, you know, your airhead uncle doing that. Goldust takes over, and he does not do a whole lot on offense. And when I mean he doesn't do a whole lot, he does not do a whole lot.
Very basic.
Like, I really thought this was going to be an extended squash, very quick, and that's just not what we got here. Throughout this match, we get as many movie references as King can muster up, from Pulp Fiction to, I mean, just everything. Any whatsoever opening to a movie reference they can make, they used it. On the outside, Goldust slams Jannetty into the steps. And even like the announcers are talking like, oh, Goldust is being very methodical here, which is code for, you know, this match kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Jannetty gets the snapmare, he sends Goldust to the floor. So again, Jannetty's getting offense here, but Goldust is able to reverse that, sends Jannetty sailing into the post. Jannetty did take a good spot off of that. The crowd heat here is completely non-existent. Jannetty botches some move that Goldust sells. That looked awful. Jannetty misses a charge in. Then this is where this is where they cut to Dracula in the crowd. And I can't remember. I think it was King or maybe JR. Somebody said, oh, is that Paul Bear or somebody there?
Is that Anthony Armento?
He's just dressed like Paul Bear. This is the creepiest looking fucking dude I've ever seen in the crowd. So Goldust hits the DDT, and it looks like he's, you know, putting him away, but Jannetty comes back again. So Marty's really hanging in there way too much. He goes up for some random dive that Goldust gets his boot up for, and then Goldust does his front suplex for the victory, which looked pretty clunky and bad too. Didn't look like a good finisher. So this, I thought this was an atrocious debut. I mean, I'm a Goldust defender, but I thought this was awful. Thought he looked awful. The psychology was all wrong, and that this was not I mean, it's either one or the other, you know, like.
Right.
I don't necessarily agree with some of his homophobic qualities that are going to be coming up, and you know, this guy here, whatever, like, it's going to be coming up, but. You know, if they're going to go all in with him like that, where he's just going to try to basically molest his opponent, you know, like get with him and then scurry away, then that's one way to go. Or, you know, the way I'd prefer is, you know, this is a guy that's bizarre and unorthodox, but is an ass kicker too. Kind of like what they did with Mankind, just with a different turn on it, you know, right. Which they hadn't done Mankind yet, but they perfected that with Mankind. Here, we get neither of that. I mean, he looks weak. Jannetty keeps coming back. I mean, we love Marty, but by this point, Marty was, you know, he was an enhancer. He should just be there to, I mean, this should have been like a 5-minute. Goldust does a couple big bumps showing, you know, the big guy like Dustin can bump, but then, you know, hits his big lariat, does his other big power moves. I always liked Dustin's power slam. I think that could have been a fine finisher, you know, because he gets good crisp snap on it or something, and then that would have been it. Instead, we got this real long, drawn out match that had no heat, and I mean, this looked like a definite botch as far as his character's concerned. I'm interested to see when they get it back on track, if he turns it around like the next time we see him. But I mean, this was a really rough debut on a like main roster, and I didn't expect it to be as bad as it is, especially if you look at the two names there. So I only want to start on this. I just thought it was almost a failure on every level and was way too long.
All right. So I liked it a little bit better than you. I had always remembered it as being worse. So maybe because you had never seen it, like it stood out as extra bad for you. For me, I've seen it a few times, so it actually, when I watched it again, I'm like, oh, all right, man, it's not as bad as I thought. The entrance and arrival at Goldust is kind of all time. Like, the, you know, that really sets the stage for who he is. And I thought the commentary was fine here, too, kind of acting surprised or in awe of him. And I kind of like that they're in awe of how big he is, like his presence and his size. Because when you see him in the promos, you're not really getting the full effect of what a big dude he is. So I kind of like that. I like Vince being surprised, too, at his hair when he pulls the wig off. He's like, where does hair go?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's like, what happened to Goldust's hair? It's like he's wearing a wig, man.
Yeah, so Goldust really slowed things down, really. And, you know, they don't really start, like, the homophobic stuff or that part of his character until later. So I don't know if they had that in mind yet. But, yeah, they're not really having to be out there being an ass kicker. They are kind of making it, like, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, that was the thing that was confusing, because I guess that starts with the Razor, right?
Yeah, it's not really until, like, December we start getting hints of that.
So. And so, yeah, it's just like, I mean, what did they want that character to be at this point in time?
Well, I wonder how much of it is Dustin trying to separate himself from the Natural. You know what I mean? Like just he's so done with the Natural and the Rhodes name, he wants to make his own. So, like, I wonder how much of this was him kind of saying, I'm going to work this slow, methodical style. You're not going to get the Natural. You're not going to get the brawling. And then maybe, you know, we'll see it start to slip in and maybe realize as he can use it. But for here, it felt like a lot of just like he was doing the opposite of what he was usually doing. So I almost feel like it was by design.
Maybe. I just don't think it was his call to throw him out there for like 12 minutes.
Well, no, not that, but I mean the way he's working the match and like the style.
Maybe. We talked about like Dean Douglas has been like more impressive than we thought. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because he looked like competent, even though his character is not. I mean, the Goldust character is obviously better than Dean Douglas. But in the ring here, I didn't think he looked competent. I mean, like, you know, I love Marty, but him dancing around like a chicken and getting all these offense moves and openings.
This felt like it should have maybe been like the third pay-per-view match with Goldust or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or something. Yeah. I mean, or definitely somebody like upper on the card. I mean, we saw Marty go 50-50 with Skip, not too long ago. And now, this guy's big debut. He's really struggling to gut out a win. It was weird.
One of the spots was Jannetty doing a snap mirror over the top to the floor while standing in the apron. That was kind of cool. The fans were into the comeback at the end that Goldust does. So, I mean, it was fine. It was slow. He's clearly trying to figure out the gimmick. Jannetty, I thought, worked pretty hard, and the commentary was good. So, I mean, I went 2 stars because I thought it just, you know, it kind of just existed. There's worse Goldust stuff coming up. And there's some better stuff coming up, too. But, I don't know. This felt fine. They were missing, like, one piece to me. Like, just, like, a little bit more aggression from Goldust. But I get what he was trying to do. Like, I kind of appreciate him trying to ease into the character and figure it out. I just feel like they should have done that before this point. I know he worked a few house shows leading up to this. I don't know how many exactly, but I do know. I remember they're leaking. I'm trying to think if it was in a PWI or something. Because as a kid watching this, I thought, I was trying to figure out how Dustin Rhodes grew his hair out so fast. Like, it didn't really resonate with me that it was a wig.
Oh, yeah.
Until I heard, I'm trying to think if it was Journal Line or PWI. Somewhere I had, like, the, you know, talked about him, how it was a wig, and he took it off. And I remember his ears were black. Were they black here?
Yeah, they were here. They were black here. So you knew this was Dustin.
Yeah, because I knew there were rumors. Okay, so he worked a dark match on the Superstars taping in August. And then he started working house shows. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He had about 6 house show matches before this.
Yeah.
I knew it was Dustin because there were strong rumors going on. And again, like I said, I was pretty much getting my updates from the newspaper hotline that was just aping, you know, Meltzer.
Right.
There were rumors as early as like Mania that he was coming in, like right after he got fired. And I remember thinking at first, because like, there were enough similarities. Like, I was trying to figure out if Isaac Yankum was him. You know what I mean? Because, he kind of had the blonde, curly hair, and he was a big guy. Like, only, like, when Yankum first debuted, like, it took me a few weeks. And then there were rumors that that he was going to come in as, like, a... I'm trying to think of something else. Never mind. I think of something else. But, yeah. So, I thought it was him at first, and then when I saw Goldust, like, I knew right away it was Dustin Rhodes. I thought it was fairly obvious that it was him. I don't think it was too...
Well, I didn't know. My dad broke kayfabe for me and let me know. I know I was watching some like Superstars or something he was on. And my dad, who was very casual, like looked at the screen and was like, "Oh, that's Dustin Rhodes with makeup." I was like, "Thank you. I did not know that." No clue, but thank you.
Yeah, so I remember just trying to piece together how he would have grown his hair that long from like March till August. But and then, of course, once I heard that it was the wig and he took it off on the house show. So
you were as shocked as Vince.
I was. Like, whoa, what's going on?
You and Vince trying to get to the bottom of the case on the wig there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so we're halfway through some typical 1995 apologetic match grading from JR and a...
I believe I've been lower than you on most of these things.
Some fair and balanced reviewing from good old Chad. But let's take a little segue and talk about some Place to Be Nation news to kind of wash away this horrible Goldust debut.
Yeah, we can do that. The biggest thing we want to talk about is the kickoff of the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament that launched on Monday. Every day we're releasing three pools, and in those pools, round one, are 10 songs you have to pick five of. 650 songs total, just like we did for the 90s. And there's been a lot of engagement early on, Chad. Like, I'm really excited and happy about how much conversation it's generated. Folks that aren't even like kind of inside the PTBN bubble, like that I see on other, like, folk, you know, members of our community are sharing it on their own like Facebook pages, and then other people are saying they voted and they're into it. So like that part of it's kind of cool too. And it's been a lot of good conversation. There's a lot of songs in the media. They're just loaded like with great songs.
I didn't think I'd be that invested in it because I typically think of myself more 90s.
Yeah.
Or even like classic rock, you know. Like before the 80s, like the 80s are a weird spot for me because, I mean, I was four when the decade ended. But yeah, once I started seeing like the rollout and doing the votes, I was like, there's a lot of really good songs. And it got pretty tough pretty quickly, like on some of these brackets.
And wait to some of the ones that are still to come. I mean, I put all these together, and when you see them, it's like, oh, God. As I was putting them together, I couldn't believe it. So some of these, it's hard getting down to five. And you forget, because there's even songs that you may like not recognize by name, and then you hear them and you're like, that's what that is.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that here. And there's so many iconic videos too. So in every post at PlaceNation.com, when you go to vote, are all the videos. So you can watch or listen to the songs if you want. And the video is obviously such a big part of the 80s. There's so many great classic videos too to check out. So it's pretty fun. This has been, you know, everyday work. I kind of been listening to the songs as I'm working and then voting. So it's been kind of cool.
Right, yeah, I've been watching a lot of the videos too, and that's been interesting. Kind of a mind warp for some of them.
So, like Scott and I did on Monday in the Place to Be podcast, I thought you and I could cast some group votes for the three that went up today.
All right.
Start with Group G. Here are the 10: Tarzan Boy by Baltimora, Physical by Olivia Newton-John, The Envoy by Warren Zevon, which I don't think I'd ever really heard, and I really enjoyed it when I listened to it.
Yeah, it's a pretty good song.
And Tarzan Boy, too, I don't think I knew until I heard it.
Yeah, Tarzan Boy was one of those that, like, I knew the song, but I didn't know the name of it. So when I played that, I was like,
And coincidentally enough, I was eating a banana while listening to it today.
Wow.
But it's been in my head since. Just a Friend, of course, The Legendary by Biz Markie. Weird Science by Oingo Boingo. Holding Out for a Hero by Bonnie Tyler. The Magic by The Cars. Whip It by Devo. Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper. And Touch of Grey by The Grateful Dead. So what's your must-have in this one?
Well, this was, to me, the toughest group today. I mean, I'm going to have a unpopular, you know, I said I was a 0.7 Johnny Sorrow. So I'm going to probably do one that's not going to make it. But my absolute must-have on this grouping is actually Touch of Grey. Only because, I mean, like, the Grateful Dead are not going to have any other representation. This was, like, their biggest hit as far as mainstream radio, and they're one of my favorite bands, so.
All right, I'm curious where
they get the nod
out
there.
It's fine. I mean, it's a fine song. Like, you know.
I honestly thought 9 out of the 10 here would be fine. I would just go ahead and say I don't think Weird Science is gonna make it in my mind, but the other 9 I thought were pretty strong.
All right, well, Time After Time has to get in.
Yeah, that was my prom song. So, 2004, so we were a little behind the time. But,
Just a Friend has to get in.
Yeah, I can just tell you So the five I ended up voting for was Touch of Grey, Just a Friend, Time After Time, Whip It, which I'd also say has to get in. And then here's, I voted for Holding Out for a Hero just because I like that as entrance music for wrestlers. But I have no problem with either that, Physical or Magic by The Cars, which I thought was underrated. Like, you know, I mean, The Cars will have a lot of songs coming on, but when I listened to that one today, it stuck in my head, mainly for the synth line after the, uh-oh, it's magic. Right. That's a really cool sound effect that I'd forgotten about. But yeah, I mean, that I would say those three are kind of duking it out for our final spot.
Yeah, I think Physical's got to get in. I mean, that's a pretty iconic 80s song.
Yeah.
And video. So I'd put that, and then I would, I think on mine, I have almost the same, except for, I did not have Touch of Grey, and I think I had Weird Science.
Yeah, of course not.
So, yeah.
You had Weird Science?
That's a great movie. Yeah.
Oh, hated that song. I did not like that song.
All right, well, I got 28 votes, so there you go. All right, so right now the top five are
Time After... So does Touch of Grey, bastard.
Well, now it has 29, so it passed it.
There we go.
So the Time After Time is very safely in, and so is Whip It. Holding Off for Hero, Physical, and Just a Friend are in. That's all pretty safe. Magic is maybe in shouting distance, but, I mean, Just a Friend should be in. I'm surprised it has as few as it does, actually.
I mean... I'm actually surprised Holding Out for a Hero is in the top five, to be honest. I mean, especially at number three, like, I figured it'd be kind of duking it out with, like, Magic or something like that. Whip It, I'd be interested to see what Whip It goes up against in the knockout round, because I could see that being an upset.
All right, Group H, we have Get It On by The Power Station, Neutron Dance by The Pointer Sisters, What's Love Got to Do with It by Tina Turner, Me, Myself, and I by De La Soul, Fade to Black by Metallica, Total Eclipse of the Heart by Bonnie Tyler, In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins, I Want to Rock by Twisted Sister, Maniac by Michael Sambello, and These Dreams by Heart. And this, it kind of starts a little soft, but this is a tough one, too. So I think the locks are, I mean, In the Air Tonight's going to go, right?
Yeah, this was actually, of these three, was probably my weakest 10. In my mind, In the Air Tonight, I think, is probably your quintessential here.
Mm-hmm. What's Love Got to Do with It's going to go.
What's Love Got to Do with It, I voted for. I voted for that. I voted for Fade to Black, even though I think Metallica is more of a 90s band.
Couldn't help yourself.
No, sorry.
I did not vote. That's not one. I listened to it again, and I'm like, that's not one of my favorite Metallica songs.
Oh, Fade to Black. Yeah. I mean, I like it. I'm pretty big on it. And then, we got to give a little shout out to our boys, De La Soul, right?
Oh, they got to get. I mean, it's embarrassing. We'll see in a minute. So I'd have those four. I would not have Fade to Black, and then I think I voted. See, I'm torn between I Want to Rock and Maniac. Maniac's a big one too.
Maniac was tough for me. I mean, I was honestly between Total Eclipse of the Heart or Maniac for my fifth spot. Maniac, I like. It's just kind of annoying. Like, I listened to it today, and it's like, I mean, that's really memorable. But even like the other like annoying kind of one hit wonder songs, like Mickey. You know, Mickey dropped yesterday. See, I like Mickey. I actually think it's. Kind of fun. Like, I can take Mickey more than Maniac. Like, you Maniac. I don't know. just got a little long in the tooth when I was listening to it. And Heart, I do not get Heart. Now, Heart is getting a lot of votes here.
Yeah, it's in. Well, it's not safely in. So right now,
yeah.
In the Air Tonight is safely in. Total Eclipse of the Heart's in. What's Love Got to Do with It? Those are all in. And then you get this conglomeration of from Fade to Black down to I Want to Rock are all within 10 votes of each other. So it's Fade to Black, These Dreams, Maniac, Me, Myself, and I Want to Rock. So, I mean, there's space to move, and De La is, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 2 votes out now, 5th, so we got to get them in.
Yeah, I don't the Heart contingent.
Yeah.
Some people need to be stepping forward in the chats, the Heart fans, probably Greg Phillips, if I'm guessing.
All right, let's quickly do Group I. We got Push It by Salt and Peppa, Eyes Without a Face.
I didn't know that came out in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why.
88, I think.
I guess 1995, WrestleMania 11 was clouding my judgment.
Well, their big hits are like 94.
Yeah.
With Shoop and What a Man. But their original stuff is 80s. Yeah. I want to... let's talk about sex and push it. Like, that's all right, that original. Right. All right, so we got Push of Salt and Pepper, Eyes Without a Face, Billy Idol, Can You Stand the Rain, New Edition, Broken Wings, Mr. Mister, We Don't Need Another Hero, Tina Turner, Caribbean Queen, Billy Ocean, Eye of the Tiger by Survivor, Freeway of Love, Aretha Franklin, She's a Beauty, The Tubes, and Can't Hardly Wait, The Replacements. Eye of the Tiger, must.
Oh, yeah. I my high school, until I moved in eighth grade.
Prom song was Eye of the Tiger?
Well, no, we were the Tigers, so we took the football field to Eye of the Tiger.
There you go.
broke through the little, like, paper, you know, that's like, go Tigers.
Fucking like, South. Yeah. Okay. Nice. All right, what else you got?
I mean, Push It, I think, definitely should go in. I was a little torn after that. I mean, I like Broken Wings.
Yeah, that's gonna go in.
I thought that was pretty good, and I kind of like Eyes Without a Face. I don't know why, but
well, so my fourth, the three you named, I have in, and Caribbean Queen to me is in. So that's four. So I'll let you pick the fifth. You want to go Eyes Without a Face?
Yeah, I would go Eyes Without a Face because I ended up picking Eyes Without a Face and She's a Beauty, which is a song I wasn't too familiar with. I actually take back what I said. I think this is the weakest.
It is the weakest.
Of the,
yeah,
today.
It's
but yeah, still some good ones. I mean, Eye of the Tiger is another kind of sneaky one.
Somehow, ten people didn't vote for that. How's that possible?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, right to like Thriller drops. And, I know.
All right, so Eye of the Tiger in easy, Broken Wings in easy, Push It in easy, Billy Ocean's in easy. And then that fifth spot has three-way tie now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see. All right, so that's Each and Every Day. It's a lot of fun. Be sure to do it. Take part. Share it. And just one other quick thing I wanted to promote PlayStation.com today, and that is Stacey O'Loughlin's continuing Diva Deep Dive looking at Molly Holly, St. Molly of Minnesota, as she dubs her. It's a great look and great bio and deep dive into Molly Holly and what made her such a stalwart of the division during that time. So I highly recommend that reading that piece and the whole series. It's you know, prestige stuff for us by Stacey.
Right. Bearing the usual drag that's thrown out there. Cowboys pay-per-view reviews. What did he, what was his match assignment this month? We buried him last month.
Oh, well,
what did he have this month? Was it Lashley and...
No, that's Scott did that one, I think.
Check
that out too, our Extreme Rules group review.
Let me pull it up. I knew I didn't have too much issue. Oh, it was Hell No. That's right. It was Hell No versus Bludgeon Brothers.
Yeah, he did okay.
Yeah, he did pretty good. So
I had match of the night. So there you go.
A focused cowboy this month on the.
All right, why don't we get back to the show?
Oh, and what a great thing waiting for us. They were really pushing the hotline on this show. So we see clips of the Guns and Kid on the hotline. I thought this was one of King's says a book. It's one kid trying to explain to his mom what happened. So it was pretty funny because, like, the picture of Kid, he did look like a 60-year-old trying to explain to his mom that he was going to be late getting home or whatever, trying to work his way out of that. That leads us to our big Hoss matchup of the night, which is Mabel versus Yokozuna. Oh man, this was a clubbering match. we had some heat when they first locked up, but I really thought the strikes were pretty awful on both ends. I mean, again, I mean, it does pain me because I am, like I said previously, I'm a Goldust defender. I'm a Yoko defender. Mm-hmm. But this was not good. I thought the punches were not good. The match completely falls apart after that, where Mabel goes for the bulldog. Yoko doesn't go down with him.
Stands up.
Just one of the weirdest bumps you'll ever see, where then he tumbles to the outside. You hear the crowd, like, audibly laugh, which, I mean, you just didn't get much, where it's, like, so ridiculous that you can hear the crowd laugh. And then on top of this, like, I mean, the action was nothing. It was just punch, kick, blah, blah, blah. And on top of that, we get a terrible finish, which is a double count out. Vince even, like, says, well, that was a less than stellar matchup. They get back into the ring tease. They're going to go face-to-face one more time to absolutely zero heat, and then they decide to embrace instead. So whatever. This is probably a worst match of the year candidate in my mind. When you look at everything worldwide, I didn't give it a dud. I gave it a half star. I'm contemplating right now dropping that down to a quarter because I really didn't think there was much redeeming here at all. I mean, maybe that awful botch gave me some comic relief because I, like, literally laughed for about 5 minutes and rewound it. Like, I love on the network, you can do the 10-second
right.
rewind. I just kept doing that, like, 8 or 9 times. So, yeah, I guess I'll stick with my half star rating, but I did not like this at all.
Yeah, I went with the quarter star. really weird match. And, of course, this all comes about kind of last minute because there was supposed to be Undertaker, Mabel, with the payback from King of the Ring. But because Yoko and Mabel broke Taker's face on that big beatdown on Raw that knocked him out of action. And they say here that Taker will be back at Survivor Series. Actually, the Mabel is starting to get more and more comfortable with the King gimmick, like, character-wise. But he's falling down the ladder quickly as he does. So, I mean, his time is over. A lot of commentary around both guys being real fat. Like, that was a big talking point.
Right. Yeah, they were definitely kind of shitting on both these guys. How uncomfortable do you think it'd have to be to, like, carry Mabel down there? Like,
oh,
those guys
fun.
Did not look like they were enjoying life.
No, it's miserable. It's like schlepping those rocks up Don's Hill. I mean, I like just you hating every minute as you're pushing ahead.
And Mo, I mean, what a non-factor he was.
He's useless.
Like, I mean, he's reaching like Arnold Scotland levels of just doing nothing at ringside. I mean,
yeah, he's getting super lazy. I think they could both tell the writing was on the wall here.
Yeah, maybe, but just awful.
So, there's some decent collision spots I thought in here, and then yeah, the big botch with the bulldog, and then the lame finish. I mean, there's a few charming moments, but it never got going, and then just a real dumb finish. You could tell that it was like, fuck it, go out there and kill 5 minutes.
Yeah,
this is supposed to be Undertaker by burying Mabel, but. Now we got to wait on that.
Like, that finish was, I mean, watching some of the 80s DVR sets from Japan, like, that was like a special finish that you saw all the time, and it just drove you nuts. I mean, because a lot of those matches were great.
Right.
And then eventually, yeah, it'd just be like they'd almost like say, all right, see you later, guys. And they'd like just dive to the outside and up, double count out. It just drives me nuts. It's so lazy, and that's what we got here. We got a shitty match on top of it, so I was just done. Then we get another kind of weird production thing where Vince is like, let's go backstage to Doc, and nobody speaks up, and he's like, oh, I guess we're not going to go to Doc. And then we go to the ring, and Doc's like standing right there, like in front of Vince, like 15 feet from him. And he's like, oh, Doc's in the ring. So Doc is there. He introduces Dean Douglas. He comes out. Then he introduces Shawn Michaels. Gorilla's there also in the ring with Doc. Shawn Michaels comes out wearing Bob Holly's jacket as he forfeits the belt. He has the big shiner on his eye, you know, red eye, looks effed up. Dean grabs the belt and gets some good heat from that. I did like Dean's line that says, that was easy. And
he has
then,
a real douche celebration here. It's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good clowning celebration. And Sean, he doesn't say anything. He just gives him the belt and then walks away.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we should talk about this because, yeah. I mean, we'll get to the match. I mean, I think they're one in the same, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, what did you think about Sean's performance here? Do you think he was regretful? Do you think he didn't want to do maybe the job to Dean? Like, what do we think actually happened here?
I will say I enjoyed him coming out to his theme all swollen and sad.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of made me laugh.
Oh, Sean!
Sexy like boy. He's all fucking bruised up and shit. No, and Dean was great. And Sean just walks away so pathetically. I don't know. I mean, do I think he was hurt? Yes. Do I think he could have probably went in there and put over Dean? Yes. I mean, do I get why he didn't? Sure. I don't know. I mean, it does suck because this is like the real turning point for Douglas, who's better than we thought, for sure.
This whole segment was a death knell.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We'll get to it with the match, but
Do you think Douglas was going to win anyway here?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, I think this was a clear... you know, political hit, so to speak, out on Douglas. I mean, I think based on Sean's performance here, which was just subtle enough, and Razor's performance in the match, which we'll get to, which was not subtle at all, I didn't think. I think this was definitely like Sean was going to drop the belt to Dean, It felt like they were behind Dean. I mean, because you got to think, I mean, by this point, they probably had plans in motion that Shawn was going to win the WWF championship.
Right, so they got to get it off
WrestleMania. So they got to get it off him. And Dean is, to me, of what we've seen on the hillside, Dean is the perfect candidate. I mean, you might could have said they may have been waiting for somebody like Goldust.
Right.
I might could have bought that, like, down the line at Rumble or something like that. But even, no, I mean, like, Shawn has to win the Rumble. So, right. I mean, it had to be, like, December.
And Bulldog wasn't being downgraded yet.
Mabel, you know, too far down the card. Yoko, it doesn't really make sense.
Maybe Kid? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, Owen and Kid, I think, are possible. But I think Dean is probably, from what we've seen, the best choice.
Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
You know, poor Jean-Pierre Lafitte. So, yeah, I think, and I'm really interested to read The Observer. For our next show, so I can see what context Dave has, because this is something that, I mean, it really feels like it. I mean, this whole thing where, like, I mean, again, this isn't as, like, self-indulgent as I've lost my smile. Like, I think that's absolute, like, peak Shawn just being, like, ridiculous. But this is, I think this is when the red flags and alerts should have started going off in your head that, you know, if we really think this is going to be the guy, he has issues. He is, I don't know if he'll be mature enough to carry, like, the banner of the WWF or whatever. So it's interesting. I mean, it's an interesting moment in time.
That jacket is ridiculous.
Yeah, that jacket, I mean, like I said, it looked like Bob Holly's. I mean, I don't even know what it was, like, what brand. It had a brand name on the back,
it was,
I think.
Pele.
Make it out. Yeah. It was fucking awful. It looked like he was making a difference, too, with Fatu. It was just
a weird segment.
Stuff,
apparently.
Oh, Pele.
World's premier source for timeless men and women's urban fashion.
There we go. Nothing says urban wear like Shawn Michaels.
Launched in 1978 as a leather outerwear company. First brand to launch designer baggy pants.
Ah.
It's in Auburn Hills, Michigan.
There we go. Jordan Duncan, can you provide us some Pele? So, I mean, Dean's celebration was good. That was probably the redeeming thing of this match. Then Razor comes out. We get the match, Razor versus Dean.
Right, I'm kind of sad because they have a list of celebrities that have worn the brand. And Shawn Michaels. But here are some.
No Shawn Michaels.
50 Cent, G-Unit, Dr. Dre, Young Dre the Truth, Ludacris, Marcus Colston, Usher, Drew Hill, Bobby Brown, Fat Joe, and most recently Mario. In a Cheers episode, I'm Okay, You're a Defective, Ted Danson probably wore a Pele bomber jacket throughout the latter half of the show. Will Smith wore one in an episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Right here. WWE Superstar and Hall of Famer Shawn Michaels wore a Pele Soda Club jacket at the October 95 pay-per-view. So there you go. Makes the Wikipedia entry.
Good for Shawn. I could say, like, Burt Reynolds. Yeah. Like what he was wearing at WrestleMania 10 or whatever. Didn't he wear like a bomber jacket at some point?
He did.
Or
yeah, it was WrestleMania 10. He had the arm in the sling with the bomber jacket.
That's right. Yeah, I could see him busting out some Pele. But now we get the match. Jerry has this line that says, Razor is fast becoming a pain in the class. That was bad. I thought this match was just boring as piss for the first few minutes. Razor's working this arm bar and just doing nothing. At one point, Vince says, Douglas put his hands on the official, which is very uncool. Just like the way he said it was very uncool, the way Vince said that. I thought Douglas, after that abysmal start, tried to pick up the pace. He takes a fallaway slam. He, like, rolls to the outside. He recovers following a clothesline. A weird spot where Douglas is, like, crouched on the guardrail and Razor pours water on him. A Razor edge results in a backdrop. And now Razor's on the outside. A very sloppy choke slam from Razor. And Dean's just not getting much on offense. He's
nothing.
Looking really weak, not credible at all. And then we have just I didn't even know what to think with this finish. Like, this was a match I'd seen before, but I'd forgotten the finish. And I mean, it's an awful finish where Razor hits this weak-looking backdrop. He has one, like, half arm draped over Douglas, and he wins.
And Douglas is half out of the ring.
Douglas' leg or whatever is clearly out of the ring. And the referee just counts and then awards the belt to Razor. I don't know what else you can say this besides, like, Razor sandbagging Douglas.
Oh, 100%. It's 100%. This is a click sandbag from the start. Like,
yeah.
With him refusing to drop the title, and then Razor, I don't know if he politicked his way to beating him, but to me this was, like, clearly Vince felt like they needed to make up for Shawn not wrestling, so they wanted to kind of make the fans happy. Razor's probably the next best choice if it's not going to be Shawn, right? And in a way, it furthers the storyline with the kid, too, so I'm okay with it, like, in theory. Because now you can say, you know, Razor, he lost the match with Kid, but here he is, now he gets a win anyway, and Kid is still left in the dark. So, okay, you further that. But the match itself is, yeah, Razor clearly just is disrespectful in the beginning where he's working the arm and kind of fucking with Dean. And then, I mean, Douglas gets just nothing in. It's basically a squash. I mean, this was more of a squash than Goldust and Jannetty. I mean, Razor just beats the shit out of him. And, like, the only salient part was Dean working the ribs in the back, and Jim Ross notes that, like, Razor's had those issues all year, which has been a pretty good through line since King of the Ring that they've actually played up. But, yeah, just all kinds of hard-hitting strikes from Razor. And then the awful finish was just a disaster. And Douglas looks like a clown. I mean, he's just jobbed out completely.
Yeah.
A guy that has been, like we've said, one of the best heels on the roster since SummerSlam. And yet here we are just getting made to look like a goof. So we'll see if he recovers at all. But, I mean, he's peaked. I mean, there's probably not much coming back from this as far as being a legit title contender. Like, they just made him look like a goober. And it's not like Shawn hit him. And, like, Razor came in and took it. Like, he was completely fresh coming in. So the only saving grace, you could say, is that he wasn't prepared for a match with Razor. But they've also fought a million times. So he should have the fucking, you know, and he's been scouting him for fucking 6 months in the back.
Yeah.
So
And they like, the way they present it, they make it like he took the easy way. It's like, how is it this guy's fault that Shawn got his ass beat? I mean, it was so ass backwards. It's like, what did Douglas do? Like, he just hung out. I mean, whether it was 9 Marines or however many, I mean, it wasn't Dean. So why is it his fault?
And no,
like,
it's not his
fault. What a cheap way to win the belt. Like, they kept saying that.
Right.
It's like, well, what do they want to do? And like you said, I mean, he's fresh as a daisy, and it's just, I thought this was awful. I mean, he peaks as a character probably celebrating the IC title belt, and 13 minutes later, he is toast.
Yeah, they just
over.
It was
I ended up going a star and a half, and now that I'm thinking, I mean, that's way too high. I mean, it's almost generous. I don't know.
I went star and 3/4.
I guess
the
I'll
same.
Stick with it, but, yeah. I mean, just talking it out, I mean, what an abomination, and what a hit job on this character.
It was.
And it's weird to defend somebody like Dean, because, I mean, of course, he's not without his trials, too. But this was just such a bad Razor performance. I mean, just a complete bullshit performance from him, too. I mean, I don't excuse him at all, either. He's a willing participant in all this. So, there we go. I mean, this is easily the most noteworthy thing on this show.
Yeah, the click had issues with him, just like others. Like, that's detailed again in Titan Sinking. The issues with Jean-Pierre Lafitte that we talked about, now the issues with Dean Douglas, you know, issues with, you know, a couple other guys we'll see coming up. And it cost him. And this time it cost him a real credible heel. You can say what you want about Lafitte. I mean, we talked about him, you know, maybe he could have been something a little bit more. But what was his peak realistically? Maybe an IC contender. Douglas, to me, actually had, like, in this era of WWF, definitely had main event qualities. I mean, he could have been in the title world title mix once you get the belt up, you know, if you build him up properly. And they completely just shit all over him. And this just axes him. I mean, this is it for him. We'll see him more, and we'll see how it goes, but this was their chance to do something with him. And at least this would be believable if he fights somebody he had never fought, and then he could, because his whole gimmick has been that he's been scouting people, right?
Yeah.
So his complaint could have been, so say you stick him in with, I don't know, maybe it's Brad or Kid, someone he hasn't fought. And you could say, well, I haven't gotten to scout those guys. It wasn't fair. You know, Razor, you can't even have that out. Like, he scouted and fought him a bunch, so... Like, they kind of had a built-in excuse that they find someone beyond Razor. And again, I get why they gave it to Razor, because I think they figured he was the closest to Shawn that would make the fans happy. But, I mean, I can't imagine any fans were real happy with this finish. And Razor gets his fourth IC title in just a you know, soft as shit way.
Yeah, really bad. So that's that. Yeah. Sean's on the hotline. So I guess you could have called there. It was like $1.49 a minute. Pretty steep for the hotline. Britt comes out for commentary for the main event. He punches Lawler, chases him to the back, which I thought was smart. I mean, we didn't need them bickering through the whole match.
Oh, I don't know. Once you see it, maybe missing it.
Four people on commentary, but yeah, so touche. And then Vince gives Britt one of the most awkward hugs. One of those, like, dad, come in here, big guy, right. Hugs like the you hug your teenager. Davey Boy Smith versus Diesel.
You didn't get, so Doc is back, and he pitches the two dudes with attitude shirt.
We got our match, but before that, yeah, Doc shields the two dudes with attitude shirt.
Did you get the
with
quote?
The writing on the back, not that Doc said directly. I did get Diesel's quote on the interview.
Doc says, kids, if you want to be cool at school, you're going to get this shirt.
There we go.
I would argue that is the opposite. And then, of course, comes with a free VHS, no doubt.
Yes, definitely. Your best of WWF. He also bothers Diesel right before he goes out. Now, Diesel, I don't know if he knew this was happening or not, but so he says he's feeling awful funky. That's all he said. He's like, I'm feeling awfully funky. And then he walks out. What the fuck did that mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that was just awful. Big Daddy Cool, I guess. Where to begin? So Diesel gets a hot start with some slams. Bulldog regroups. I thought Brett was good on commentary here saying, like, you know, Bulldog's got the speed advantage, but Diesel has the power advantage because he's so big. British Bulldog tries to post Diesel's leg, but he gets slammed kind of face first into the post. Diesel goes over the top and gives a little shove to Brett. But as he's doing that, British Bulldog comes up from behind, clips him, and he begins to work on the leg. And I like that they were bringing up Brett's, like, past encounters with Bulldog at SummerSlam and Diesel in 94-95. He talks about, like, Diesel's probably one of the toughest opponents he's ever been in the ring with, and that, you know, he don't know if he want to go through the whole family drama again with Bulldog like he had to at the SummerSlam. Cornette gives an elbow on the outside, which I thought was one of the funniest spots of the night.
I would say that's the high spot of the match.
Yeah, I mean, so this match is just basically Bulldog working the leg. Like, that's all it is. I'm somebody that appreciates loom work. We get a lot of it here.
But what were these fucking submissions? Like, they're not even holds. He's just laying there holding, like...
Yeah, they're not... You know? I mean, they're not like a heel hook.
Right.
I mean, it kind of looked like a heel hook. Like, he was in the position for the heel hook, but he wasn't hooking the heel. So
he's laying there literally holding his leg.
Yeah, I mean, he basically has a chin lock on his leg.
Yeah.
So that was a problem. I mean, when he works the crab, but yeah, I mean, it's certainly not captivating at all. And Bulldog's somebody that's, you know, really came into his own in this heel character. But like I said a couple weeks ago, like, I don't think he's found, you know, like the connective tissue.
Right.
To be a heel throughout the match and to work on top with enough captivating stuff. I think that's definitely true here. He just works the leg over. He applies the sharpshooter. Brett kind of shits on it. And Vince, like, says, oh, no, I think he does have it applied out. Diesel powers out of the sharpshooter. British Bulldog goes for his power slam. Diesel fights out and then hits the big boot, but he's still limping around. Cornette gets sent into the ring, and him and British Bulldog run into each other. Diesel then hits his, like, leg drop over the ropes, and he did hobble to hit that. So, I mean, I thought Diesel's selling was actually pretty good, to be honest, during his comeback here. Diesel gets posted on the outside, and he swats at Brett, and then Brett gets into the ring, and we have a really cheap-ass DQ. Just a night of bad finishes, and this was, I thought, another one. This one may not be as bad because, you know, it sets up kind of beef with Brett with both competitors. So, I mean, the end of the match is Dave Boy Smith announces the winner. Brett and Diesel slug it out as the show goes off the air. A decent psychological match, but a really dry one, and I did not think it was a very good finish. I'd kind of like something a little more creative than Brett just going in there and punching away. So I ended up going 2 stars on this main event.
Maybe the highest grade ever given for this match.
and that was slowly on basically right. Diesel selling and Bulldog at least being focused.
Yeah, and it's a good look. You know, the heel swagger for Bulldog's there. JR mentions that natives came in by the thousands. From 1,000 miles on charter buses out here to Winnipeg. So there you go. Yeah, Diesel used a lot of power early. We get the turn the tide. And then the high spot early is when Diesel pie faces Brett at ringside. And that kind of is what triggers the eventual end. And then, yeah, we get all the leg work. The Cornette stuff was funny. And then the DQ. It was a shit finish to just a real long plodding match. And I don't want to say it felt like the beginning of what should have been a better match, because 20 minutes is long enough, but it felt like it was building to something that just never comes. Like, that's the biggest problem, and it just never happens. And the crowd was just dead quiet after the announcement. They just, like, fuck this. We just sat through this shit show, and now you stuck us through 20 minutes of Bulldog laying on Diesel's leg, and then we don't even get any kind of finish. And then Brett and Diesel, that's probably the highlight, is their brawl after, and they get pulled apart. But the finish actually comes into play, we'll see in the future, the way they do it, not only for Brett and Diesel, but also for Bulldog. It becomes a hook for him, too. So, like, the finish, I think in a vacuum makes sense, but when you put it on top of what this card has been, there's no match on it that would have carried the show, right? So, like, these other pay-per-views, and even in EOS 3, we kind of had the anchor match. Like, we didn't have that here. So it's just a bunch of nothing and then an awful finish on top. And, of course, this is the legendary show where after the match, Vince ripped off his headset, slammed it down, and bitched out Diesel right in front of the ring. And you know, as legend goes, this is kind of where he was like, all right, I'm done. Like, it's time for a change. And, you know, this we're nearing on a year for Diesel as champion. And it's been a very up-and-down reign at best. But it was time to go. I mean, I don't even know if it's even his fault. You know, like, I don't know if any of it's been Diesel's fault. Like, he's the kind of done what he's been asked. He's sold. He's worked hard. He's been the company man. He's gone on all the, you know, media stuff. Like, he's done what he's been asked to do. It's just he was put in a position to fail much of the time. And if you know, by the time they give him someone like Bulldog, who's kind of credible, we're done with Diesel. The rope is short. And when you get a match like this, you're like, all right, we're done. You know, because you think, like, all right, if you can't do it now, you can't ever do it. But Bulldog, you know, didn't exactly help things either. So it's just a tough end to a tough show. And it's funny because on the way home from the gym tonight after work, I was listening to a Litz, My Own Worst Enemy. And it kind of resonated thinking of the show tonight because I feel like the lyrics go very well with, like, what was happening here. Like, just, you know, like, they can't get out of their own way. You know, like, at this point, like, that's what it feels like. It's like you can see what's happening in WCW. We've chronicled it. And they're trying to make this a little bit more realistic and hard-hitting. And you just look at what they're delivering on pay-per-view, and it's just not – we just, you know, like, the Raw, the build-up been fine. Like, it was cohesive and made sense, whether you want to credit Bill Watts or not. And then you get to pay-per-view and just all completely falls apart. And that's all throughout 95. You could argue that Vince was just his own worst enemy.
Yeah, it's interesting with Diesel. I mean, he's probably like a replacement level champion. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think he like did enough to, like, you know, like, his reputation as champion, of course, kind of precedes itself. I don't necessarily know it's as bad as history wants to remember it, but I don't think he did enough either to, like, overcome, compensate, like, those bad hands he was dealt, you know, either. So it's kind of a weird overall vibe. And there you have it. I'm looking forward to a change, I can tell you.
No, me too.
After watching this.
And after watching all of 95 now, pretty much at least the Diesel portions of it, like, it's not as bad as it historically leads you to believe, you know, him. He's not really on as much as you think he would have been. But
right.
And a lot of it really, I think, was out of his control. When he's given stuff to work with, he delivers. His promos were all good. A lot of his, like, segments were fine. But then he's just in there with these guys. Unmotivated Sid, stale Tatanka, green Mabel, you know, Bulldog doing whatever the fuck he was doing on this show. You know, it's like when you look at what he's saddled with, and again, you know, he's the common denominator through all of it, so he deserves some of the blame. But he was never going to be a guy that could carry a match, and that's the problem. You know, when Hogan, you know, Hogan could work a little bit more, it was a different era, but he was also given guys that could, he wasn't in there with guys he had to carry, right? I mean, he was in there with a lot of guys that could carry him. And Diesel doesn't get that benefit. He's saddled with these guys that can't work that way.
I guess. I mean, yes or no. I mean, I think Hogan had that great formula.
Right.
Which actually, I think Hogan is. Yeah, I mean, everybody. I mean, I'm
he's
part
a better
of the
worker
Hogan's
than
underrated. Nash. Yeah, I mean, like we think that. So he was more adaptive too. He could do like the first match, two match, three match series to blow it off.
Yeah, but if you look at some of the guys he's with, it's better than what anything Diesel has. I mean, even if you go down to like, what would you say is some of the worst guys, Hogan? Like Bundy. I mean, Bundy's better than.
What about like his stuff with Gang?
No, I would say Gang is better than Mabel and 95 Tatanka. And, you know.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
Sid definitely probably is
two.
Equal. You know?
Yeah, probably about equal with Sid. Yeah. I mean, Diesel didn't have many opponents.
Right.
I mean, he didn't have Brett throughout, except at Royal Rumble and when he loses. And he didn't have babyface Shawn, period. He had Shawn at Mania.
And the problem is, too, the best heels are small, like Owen. And so, like, it's tough, like, to put him
not
as a
very
contender.
Credible.
Right.
Yeah.
Or they're fat. Which can't do much. Like Yoko is kind of.
Well, why couldn't? Why they were so adverse to just doing a Taker Diesel right. feud here?
I think they want to take from Diesel's pops. That's. I mean, I really think that's why. Like they had already split the pop with Brett with Shawn to start the year. They probably didn't want to kill him even more with Taker. That's my guess.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I don't know if it could be saved or who, but. The pieces weren't there. Or like Heel Ramon. I mean, I think Heel Ramon is somebody that's tall enough that could look credible.
Heel Ramon getting over on Taker and then challenging Diesel is probably the way. Or I've said it before, a longer run with Bigelow in the spring before turning Bigelow face. Like, I think
right.
that could help. Like, if he fights Bigelow at In Your House 1 and you push back the Sid stuff, you know, like maybe you buy some time for him.
All right. So that kind
of. Even Backlund. Like, they cut that off to get to Brett at the Rumble. They try to tease the continuation of Diesel Backlund after he beats him, but then it dies off real fast. Like, he's another guy that could have snuck in here
right.
for
yeah,
a
he
shot.
Could have done something. Yeah, sure. All right, you ready to get to the awards?
Razzies, right yeah.
So, match of the night, we both go Guns versus Razor and Kid.
Yep.
Correct. Segment of the night, moment of the night, what did you have?
I had the post-match of the tag title match.
Okay, I agree with that. I mean, I'd say our only two choices are that and Shawn forfeiting the belt.
Right.
That's so weird. I mean, maybe Brett and Diesel slugging it out at the finish.
Godwin coming out.
That was okay. No, thank you on that. Your MVP, who did you go there?
It was such a soft night. I hate to do it because he was such a dick in the IC title match. I just went with Ramon because I thought, you know, he was good in the tag title match.
Double duty.
Yeah, you know, he works, you know, it's kind of his show, but it almost like it feels like he should be punished for his actions. Like, I don't know if I kind of want maybe to go with Kid. like I feel like Ramon, like, negates everything he does positively with his actions in that IC title match. So, I don't know. I guess if you're looking for a kayfabe point of view, it's Ramon. If you're saying
right.
from just like I think the way we normally look at it, he probably doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, I went 1-2-3 Kid.
Right,
I could not go with,
I'm good with
I
that.
Could not go with Razor after performance. I mean, there just wasn't a lot of options. I mean, I thought Kid was probably the best of the bunch. So
yep.
Went with him there. We did have one debut, I guess. Are we considering Goldust here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then this got a 0.4 buy rate, so a really bad buy rate. The previous In Your House got 0.7. So, you know, nearly half were gone for this one. So not a good buy rate. And now let's get to our final grade.
I had a couple of quotes, by the way, which you
already
skipped.
Oh, yeah, quotes, yeah.
Well, two of the ones you already called out. It's a grown man carrying a perfume bottle around JR stand, which made me laugh. Razor's becoming a pain in the class. I put that down. And then this jacket costs more than the house Fatu lives in, King said.
Good Lord.
I mean,
you can always count on one, like, racist King comment that gets thrown in there.
All right, so, yeah, final grade.
I went 2 out of 10. I don't know. I mean, well, have you decided, are you going to grade 0 or are we going to say like 1 is the bottom?
Are we doing halves? Yeah, we're doing halves, right? So, I mean, a half is probably like 0. I don't think there's a show that's a 0. I mean, we didn't do King of the Ring 95, and this is, I think this is probably the worst show we're going to see. Which is good. Good news, right? So I don't think we see anything worse than this.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'm going 1.5. I won't change it. I'm going to go 1.5. Okay. I just didn't think there was much. I mean, the tag match is good, but between that, you know, that Yoko Mabel match, which is like hilariously bad, like that's like your, you know, your Botch Mania special that, you know, it's kind of funny. Bad, but it's bad. And then the Douglas versus Razor train wreck, which is like actually kind of this could hurt the company bad. You just got all sorts of bad. Throw in the main event, which, you know, like I said, a 2-star, which is a decent match in my mind, and I'm probably overrating it just because I'm like, you know, I have a fetish for limb selling, and Diesel did a competent job there. So that's your main event. And then, like I said, with the opener is the worst thing on the show. That's great. But the opener wasn't good either. I mean, I thought it was at best decent, went a little bit less than decent. So, I mean, just overall, I think this is an awful show. I went 1.5 over 10. And then once you give your grade, I guess we can have a discussion, like in the annals of history, where we think the show ranks.
Yeah, I went 2.5 out of 10, which for me, you know, is pretty low, given my 95 WWF tendencies. So.
Right.
I'm comfortable saying it's the worst show we're going to see unless we, you know. Yeah, I mean, until we get to, like, if we survive to, like, later era WCW.
Like Halloween Havoc 2000.
Right, so something may come close. But from a WWF perspective, I'm confident saying we're not going to get anything this bad over the next, like, 3 years or so, which is good. So that said, I've said it before. We talked about it. I do think we're now hitting the absolute valley of the WWF, and it continues. I'm not saying we're done, because the next few weeks of Raw are up and down, and to me, Survivor Series starts to turn up. So we're getting to the bottom. So be happy with that. I'm not saying 96 is going to be a cakewalk, because there's a lot of rebuilding in there. But you can, at least with 96, you can see, like, the purge has happened, and they're like, they're trying to rehab, right? So, like, there's an excitement to it, so it doesn't feel as stale or beaten down. Like, is what we feel right now. We're like, if you watch a show, you would feel like this promotion's like on its deathbed, right?
Yeah, this was depressing. I mean, I finished this show. I was at work, had a slack day at work, and it was like 2 o'clock when I finished the show today. And I was just like, I mean, I just want to go home and take a nap. I don't know. Like, I had to like walk around, and I like visited with some people. I had to like get my mind off of it, which is weird for like a 23-year-old show. But I really did not like this one. So where do you think this ranks, like, on the all-time pay-per-view scale?
Let's just stick to WWF, because WCW's got so many
WCW's its own ball of wax, so WWF only. I mean, King of the Ring 95, I'd say, is in contention.
Yeah, and this might be...
I think
King of the Ring's worse, because I think historically it means more. Like, it's a bigger show. They had more guys on the car. The opportunity, like, for this show, Shawn's hurt, Taker's hurt. Like, that one, there's no excuse. Like, those guys were all healthy on that show. Now, you could have said here they could have used Brett, especially being in Canada. You know,
right.
You think he could have been in here somewhere. But I'm fine that we didn't get, like, him and fucking Yankum again. Like, we talked about that.
Yeah.
How
well,
Raw
that was
a kind
dark
of their match.
Yeah. Just, I mean, come on. I mean, and what else? I mean, what would even be contender? I mean, because the thing is, well, the thing about this show, one of the things about it is it's an hour and 50 minutes. So, I mean, that was what I talked about, like, the other night. Like, I know you had a group for Extreme Rules, but I watched that, you know, in the confines of my own home by myself. And, I mean, it really felt like a wasted night to me when I was done with that. Because I committed, like, 4 hours and 15, you know, including the pre-show, like, 4.5 hours to this thing. And at least with this show, I mean, it was an hour and 50 minutes. I started right after lunch, and I was done by 2, like I said. So that is in its corner compared to something like, I mean, like WrestleMania 32, I know a lot of people like despise that show, but I mean, I would say like, you know, something like AJ versus Jericho, as maligned as that match is
right. Oh yeah.
Better than anything here.
In the ladder match.
Then the 3-way women for sure is better. Right. Was that 3-way or 4-way anyway?
Yeah. 3-way. Yeah. That was
3-way. Yeah. I mean, definitely better than anything here. So it's just tough. I mean, mate, like, what do you think about, like, King of the Ring 2000? Now, that's an interesting one because that's, again, like, one of those, like, missed opportunity shows.
Right.
And
I feel like
there's
a couple
really
things.
Nothing good there.
It's got to be something better than this, though, right?
I don't know. I don't. Yeah. I need to look at my grades.
I mean, it's too. I don't look. By, like, 08, all the shows fucking blend for me. So there's probably some garbage in 2010 and 11 that you could say is, like, in the conversation. Like, I think DX Dudley Boys in the dumpster match is probably better than anything here by far. I don't remember the four way for the tag. I mean, even Angle Jericho had to be better than stuff here. Like,
I'm looking at my grades, and I did have Angle and Jericho at 3 stars, okay. But that's like my that's my peak. I mean, it's just a lot of like 2.5, so 2.75, 2.25, star and a half, star. Yeah, I mean, it was just that was a very posh show. I mean, yeah, this may be up there. I mean, I think this is probably up there with King of the Ring. It was one of the worst ones they did.
Yeah.
Because even, I mean...
Well, there's no value to it. There's, like, zero value.
Yeah, there's
value.
No value. I mean, because, like, even, like, okay, like, this is going to have some people rolling over their grave, but, like, all right, like, a show like Survivor Series 1990, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if that technically has, like, a good match on it. There's probably, like, maybe the Taker debut match I might think's fine, and, like, the finale match is okay. But it probably tops out around 3 stars, too. But I think, like, just for campiness and nostalgia, that, like, is so much bigger than this that it's still a better show. You know, even the bad on that show with the gobbledygooker and everything, and even right. Worse comes to worse, he still had Taker's debut.
Yep.
How
about SummerSlam 2010?
Oh, that's a bad show. I just watched that one. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think. Oh yeah, that's not a good show though. It's up there. Yeah. SummerSlam 2010 is weird because that does have the bad booking too.
Right.
I don't think that's intentional. Like I did think it was with Douglas here, but it's still really effing stupid because Nexus was done after that. I mean, my match of the night there is like the Kane versus Ray match, which was decent. It's, you know, 3 stars. Randy Orton and Sheamus is atrocious. That's a bad show, y'all. I mean, the elimination match at SummerSlam is probably better technically than any right. match here. It's just terribly booked at the end.
I mean, they're kind of lucky they had Watts come in for that TV because I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, it really helped kind of sell this show. If they were just left to their own devices and we'll see, like, the next couple after this, like, I don't know how strong this stretch would have been. Like, it might have been even worse if they didn't have him to come in to do that 6-man beat down and a couple other things to hype the show. They might have really been in trouble.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess our conclusion is this is at least in the discussion as the worst pay-per-view WWF's ever had.
Oh, yeah.
I think we can safely call it that. Okay. We did get quite a bit of feedback, as I figured we would for this turd. So, if you want to fire that off.
Yeah, I can. Chris Hatley checks in, says, one of the worst shows of the 90s. Nothing of note happens. All the matches are slow, and the wrestlers didn't look interested. Hunter versus Fatu, blah. Jannetty, Goldust, awful. The best match to me is Guns versus Kid and Razor, and that couldn't have been even more than 2 stars. That was a little bit higher. Razor doing the Razor's Edge is always impressive, especially when he does it to a decent-sized opponent. Diesel Bulldog lacked any emotion and fell flat on its ass. I rewatched this because of your podcast and struggled to get through it. The Raws leading up to the show weren't great, but at least they're quick watches. This was just brutal.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I feel like we like the tag match. I'd be interested to see if other people like the tag match, because I do think, like, if you don't think that tag match is, you know, at least good or bordering on good, then yeah, I mean, it gets really
then you really hate the show.
Yeah, I mean, if you think that's too...
Matt Drysdale says, I was at this show, God bless you, and says it was terrible live as well. So there you go. Yeah, do you want to pull up the dark matches, there. Chad, quick? We didn't talk about those while I'm reading.
Okay. I'll pull those up as you read the next one.
All right, Matt Burdett. The show was doomed right from the start. Nothing interesting happened for most of the night. Monsoon announcing that Michaels would have to forfeit the title, thanks to a lot of Marines. To Dean, Shane Douglas, only to have the rug pulled out off of Dean when he was immediately doing the J.O.B. to Razor, who was pulling his double duty, while Brett was relegated to main event commentary duty. Speaking of the main event, it was torture. The 89-90 episodes of You Can't Do That on Television look like golden ages, Saturday Night Live compared to this. Halloween Havoc 95 is a little bit better.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I do think this is worse than Great American Bash 91,
mm-hmm.
just as a point of comparison. I do have our dirt matches pulled up, too. This is from Wikipedia. So Henry O. Godwin defeated Psycho Sid.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, Sid. Yeah. Dark days for Psycho Sid. Bret Hart defeated Isaac Yankum in 14-10. We don't have the time for the other two dark matches. Owen Hart and Yokozuna defeated Bam Bam and Savio Vega. And actually, before the show, there was a dark match with Rad Radford losing to Bob Holly.
That tag might have been better. Than they could have stuck that on your own. Yoko.
Maybe. I mean, as we talked about, we had no hearts. So, I mean, no Canadian.
I'm fine,
contingent.
But I'm fine now seeing Brett and Yakim again. Like, I'm good. I'm glad they kept that. I feel bad for the fans that have sit through that shit.
I mean, they
again.
Might could have jammed that cage match in to this, but.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't like it that much either, so it wouldn't have helped.
All right, my boy Nicolaj Tarp. Sure, there was no great matches, but the audiences finally get to see Goldust live, and the title match builds to the main event of the next two pay-per-views. So in your house four, at least set up two candidates for match of the year, 95. I'll give them that. In your house is fun, as short setup shows, well, there's an air of slight collective off day on this one. I think we've had way worse. All right, Nicolaj, there you go.
Blue Skies Nicolaj. I think he may have been hacked by Putin there.
The air is better where he is, so I'll give him that. Michael DeDamos. The Damos checking in.
Boy.
Pretty much the end for Dean Douglas. What do you think was ultimately his downfall? Shane has said in shoot interviews that Click Politics did him in. Others have said it was his lousy attitude. There's also possibility he's not just ODU material. What's your take? I would say it's a mix probably of a couple things.
Yeah, I mean, the truth's probably somewhere in the middle, but I mean, I think we have a track record with the Click that, you know, obviously if guys end up on the wrong side of them and then they disappear, if that keeps happening, then, I mean, what's the one common theme of all that? That's the Click. And, yeah, I mean, I'm sure Shane wasn't the easiest guy to deal with. He certainly wasn't throughout the rest of his career. So, Dick Flair and all that. So,
right.
I mean, it was little A, little B, but unfortunate.
Yeah, it sucks. He was actually kind of good.
Right.
Jay Hinchy, another pay-per-view I still have not seen, but I've heard some pretty bad things. It does have some memorable things like Sean forfeiting the title, Goldust making his debut, and then the bad title match to spell the end of Diesel's main event run. A shame this has been Winnipeg's only pay-per-view to this day. So there you go.
What a claim to fame. They stole the Thrashers, but they can always have in your house four.
Tim Slomka, why is a Canada show not having the heart?
Dog.
Yeah. Why is a Canadian show not have the hearts? Also, why doesn't any match live up to the hype? It's very interesting until the bell hits Mabel versus Yoko, Vince's dream match. And one more, Steve McCullough. Razor's sarcastic fake enthusiasm winning the IC belt will never not be amazing. The main event's really weird. It's like the first two-thirds of a good Japanese match where they're laying on the groundwork for a hot finishing sequence, but they never actually get to it, so none of it builds to anything, and it just ends with the DQ. Nash's reign is on life support here.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the main event's kind of more like a 70s-style NWA-type match, actually. With a lot of working of limbs and stuff like that, kind of chain wrestling. Again, I mean, I think the problem there was Bulldog just didn't do much creatively on top. But, I mean, like I said, his focus was there. And, hey, it's the effort that counts, right? So, I mean, his head was in the right place, at least.
All right, so that'll do it. That's all the feedback. So thanks, everyone that checked in. We appreciate it. And be sure to keep the feedback coming, even for the TV episodes, if you get to watch them. So next week we will be doing, or next episode, I should say, the 1023 Raw Nitro. So we get the fallout from this show and then the go-home for Halloween Havoc. So it should be interesting back-to-back.
Yeah, I'll probably just say it won't be next week. I'll be at the beach. Okay. I'll be at Club La Vila. So maybe a couple weeks.
Okay, yeah. Well, hopefully this gets you by. But you should watch those shows in the meantime and leave your feedback. And also check out all the other great podcasts we have at PlayStation.com and all our feeds, PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop, Pro Wrestling Only.
No.
Go ahead, you can do it.
PlayStation Pop.
There you go. Brand new Place to Be podcast. Speaking of the Pop feed, Jennifer Smith joined me and Scott, her debut on a Vintage Vault.
She popped her mothership MSG Cherry.
There you go. What'd you think? I thought she did a good job.
Yeah, better than the other schlub that was in the show.
That's harsh.
Yeah, I think I've drunk too much. I'm straight shooting tonight.
All right. Well, anyway, we looked at the May 88 MSG. Check that out. And then Aaron and I, No Holds Barred, are rolling along, so we've done a few of those already, too. Be sure to check those, and we got a new one on the horizon. We'll be talking more GWWE tag teams, which, by the way, I think is picking up some steam, so make sure you start getting involved in the conversation there, too.
Yep.
Anything else you want to talk about?
Nah, I think I'm pretty good. I kind of enjoyed talking about the show. It gave me some good therapy.
Yes, and sometimes the worst shows are the best ones to discuss.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think talking about, like, the whole Dean Douglas thing was interesting, and what could have been with Diesel. So those are at least two themes that are big developments, really, for 1995 in the world of WWF, and we hashed them out.
Sure did. All right, be sure to vote. Greatest song of the 80s tournament. Share it with your friends and family as well.
Real quick, what do you think is going to win that, like, at the end of the day?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like there's, like, a legit 10 to 12, like, that could maybe be out there. I mean, Thriller is kind of, like, the easy one.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to gun to my head, I would say Thriller.
Yeah. But there's a few other contenders in there that are sneaky, so I don't know. Yeah. I honestly don't know off the top of my head. When I was going through, I'm like, oh, it could be this. Oh, it could be this. Like, there's a lot of strong options.
Well, I mean, we'll see how the seating checks out, but that you too, could get stuff, too, where, like, I mean, two Madonna songs or something like that up against each other, so that'd be interesting, too.
Yeah, no, there's some interesting ones. And the fun part, too, in the first round is seeing the reveal, where everything falls, what songs would be in there, what you've forgotten about. But, no, there's some big ones. I mean, you know, we went through and ranked, like, kind of the top 128, like, top two of every group, and there's some big ones there, like Back in Black by AC/DC, you know, like, just shit like that are big ones. Living on a Prayer, like, that's another big one. Trying to scan through quick and see, like, other ones that really jump out as potential.
Touch Paradise, of Grey.
Yeah. Paradise City, Welcome to the Jungle, you know, Guns N' Roses, those two. Those are both big. Don't Stop Believing by Journey, obviously.
Don't Stop Believing. Yeah. I mean, Journey's huge. Journey and Heart. I mean, I figured it with Journey, but, yeah, I mean, Heart was a surprise. But, yeah, I mean, Journey, I think, has a beef because, yeah, pretty much anything Journey-wise has been doing gangbuster so far.
You get the two Madonna ones, like A Virgin Material Girl. Right. Those are big. Thriller, Billie Jean, Beat It are all big.
some Prince.
Yeah, Purple Rain. I mean, obviously a big one. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot out there that could be in contention for number one. Free Fallin' with Tom Petty. Africa, obviously, is a contender, too. So, a lot of big ones that we'll see as we go along. So, all right. I think that's it. We're out. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. We'll do October 23rd. Be sure to get your feedback in. That's it. JT, Chad, we're done. Smell that napalm.